from Illinois Public Media. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's time for our Friday Reporter Roundtable, where we talk about what's been making news across the state. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by Lindsay Jones, reporter with WGLT in Bloomington Normal. And after that, we'll talk state and national politics. But first, we're going to spend some time talking about Saturday's killing of a 6-year-old Palestinian-American boy and the wounding of his mother in unincorporated Will County. And I should note, I said the wrong location when I mentioned this on Wednesday's show this week. It happened in Plainfield Township. The suspect, 71-year-old Joseph Chuba of Plainfield, is charged with murder and 2 counts of a hate crime, among other charges. The incident sparked sympathy and outrage across the U.S., including multiple remarks from President Joe Biden. Joining us now to walk through this and what the response has been is Jake Sheridan, news reporter with the Chicago Tribune. Jake, welcome back to The 21st Show.
Thanks for having me.
Can you start by just telling us more about what we know now about what happened on Saturday?
Yeah, so in court Monday, prosecutors said that Joseph Kazuba had knocked on the door of his tenants, the Al-Fayumes, Wadir and his mother, Shaheen. And, you know, he told Wadir's mother that he was upset about the war between Hamas and Israel. Prosecutors said he had become kind of obsessed with the war there. And she suggested that they pray about the war. And he became angry with her. He choked her and stabbed her, prosecutors said. And you know, she fled to her bathroom and called 911 when she came out. She found her son had been fatally stabbed 26 times. The knife was still in Wadir. And the police found Chuba outside. You know, his face was covered in blood in the mugshots that have appeared across the media. And of course, as you said, prosecutors have since charged him with murder and 2 hate crimes as well.
What can you tell us about the 6-year-old boy, Wadir? Who is he in life?
Yeah. Well, his father said he loved everything. He said he loved his life, his family. He enjoyed playing basketball and soccer. You know, the photo the family shared showed him at his 6th birthday, just a week before he died. He was wearing a blue birthday hat. And, you know, they said he was a happy kid, a normal, happy kid.
Gets me. They mentioned the Legos, which, of course, my own kids and a lot of kids are into. But for some reason, that detail is one of the ones that stuck with me. He loved Legos as well. You went to the funeral for Wadir on Monday. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, you know, I think one thing that stuck out to me was the contextualization that some of the activist groups and community groups, you know, made an emphasis on. Ahead of the funeral, there was a news conference where a number of community leaders spoke, and there was a crowd around the reporters and speakers as well. And, you know, the folks who were there to attend Wadir's funeral, they were really upset. They were upset with elected officials and the media, who they say have turned a blind eye to suffering in Gaza while being biased towards Israel. And they think that the rhetoric that has been spread motivated this attack. Imam Omar Suleiman compared Wadir's death to the death of Emmett Till, and he emphasized the similarities between Wadir and children killed in Gaza. You know, during the funeral or during the service inside the mosque, I was watching Wadir's father, Oday, and you know, he was just feet away from his son's casket. It was a small white casket at the front of the room. There were thousands of people inside and outside of the mosque. It was totally full. Afterwards, Wadir was buried at Parkholme Cemetery, and the crowd there too was also angry. They were waving Palestinian flags, and you know, again, speakers made a point to highlight connections between what happened here and what's happening in Gaza as well.
I want to play some sound of the funeral on Monday. We have tape. This is Mahmoud Youssef, who is Wadir's uncle.
Now, I want to ask anybody here, a 71-year-old man sitting on top of a 6-year-old kid, stabbing him more than 26 times, and he was looking in his eyes. You tell me, is that exaggeration? You tell me what type of man he can do that. I would like to say he's accountable, but he's not. I think our president needs to come out and say something. Our officials needs to come out and say something. We're not in war. The war is overseas. You want war? It's overseas. It's not our war. It's not United States war.
Well, we certainly did hear from a lot of officials. What are some of the reactions that we heard from officials, both at that funeral itself as well as beyond?
The president of the Plainfield Township, he called Wadir an all-American boy. And, you know, there were a lot of officials who attended and didn't speak then, who have also shared statements, you know, expressing their dismay and their sadness about Wadir's death. I saw Secretary of State Alexei Janulius, Governor J.B. Pritzker was there, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson was there. And of course, we've also heard now from President Biden. You know, in the days following Wadir's death, he and First Lady Jill Biden expressed their condolences and, you know, identified the attack as an act of hate against Palestinian Muslims, and you know, called on people to speak out against hate. And of course, President Biden highlighted that again last night in his primetime address to the country, where he also invoked Whittier's death.
Yeah, we have some tape of that as well. Let's listen to, again, this is President Biden from his Oval Office address last night.
A little boy here in the United States, a little boy who just turned 6 years old was murdered in their home outside of Chicago. His name was Wadia, a proud American, a proud Palestinian-American family. We can't stand by and stand silent when this happens. We must, without equivocation, denounce anti-Semitism. We must also, without equivocation, denounce Islamophobia.
So, Jake, as you continue to follow this story, what are you going to be watching for in the days, weeks, and months ahead?
You know, one thing that I'm really interested in now is Whittier's mother. She's been recovering from her wounds. She was also, you know, severely hurt, but she's survived. I'm really curious to hear about what she thinks. I mean, I can't imagine how painful this must be for her. And, you know, I think she has a really important voice here that we need to hear from. And of course, we'll also be watching to see how Joseph Chuba's time in court goes. I think he's expected to appear next Monday, not this upcoming Monday, but the one after that. And so we'll be watching that as well.
Jake Sheridan is a news reporter with the Chicago Tribune. Jake, thank you for taking the time to be with us on the 21st show today.
Thanks for having me.
And we now shift over to Lindsay Jones, who's a reporter with WGLT in Bloomington Normal, to talk about what's making headlines there. Lindsay, welcome back to the 21st show.
Hi, Brian. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you as well. And listeners, I want to invite you to join our conversation today on the program. We're live throughout our show, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. I want to talk on, I don't know, is this a lighter? It's certainly lighter than what we've been talking about on the show, and that's Illinois State University's search for a new president. The institution is promising an open search. What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different ways that you can go about hiring a university head. You can do that in an enclosed process, where the Board of Trustees and maybe anyone else they invite in is really the group that knows who the finalists are, who's being considered, and who ultimately will get the job once the board votes. There's also a way to do it that invites the public in and invites members of the university community, staff, faculty, students. And that's what ISU's Board of Trustees has promised to do with this search. And kind of why it matters so much is ISU is seeking to replace a president that was on the job for less than 2 years, who was supposed to be on the job for 4 years, but resigned with less than 2 years on the docket. And so the decision now to choose a replacement is a pretty important one, not only because we're looking for a permanent and stable position of leadership, but also because ISU's interim president has said the university itself is at an inflection point. So ISU is very proud of its plans to develop a new College of Engineering and enroll students by fall of 2025. Approval for that is still pending from the Illinois Board of Higher Education, but those plans are underway. They've been underway for some time. And ISU has also been very proud of its increased enrollment, just bringing in larger freshman class after larger freshman class for the past couple of years. So who it plans to hire for the top job, I think, matters significantly. And whoever they do end up hiring will also be a president that's going to be navigating college after affirmative action. The Supreme Court issued that landmark decision earlier this summer. And I think that navigating the particulars and the minutia details of that in the coming years is also going to be something that's very important. And so for the university to make that process as open to the public as possible, I think is a good sign.
Yeah, no, certainly a lot to navigate, as you mentioned, higher enrollment, potentially a new college coming online, as well as some of the big national political landscape changes we've seen. Is there contention? I mean, as people are looking, you know, I know sometimes the faculty can get involved in these searches and make their voices known.
Yeah, so I just think it's a really interesting moment because when the university's last permanent president resigned in February, the legal agreements that were put into place really just tamped down on what was known about why that was happening. And so that raises questions. When people don't have clear answers in front of them, right, they raise questions. And so I think that choosing to do this in an open way is kind of a nod to that kind of contention of, well, why is this happening? Why is it happening in the middle of the year? Why is it so abrupt? I think that this is intended to say we're going to do things differently than the last time that we did this. Whether that happens will remain to be seen. But
yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
Sticking with the theme of higher education, there's another institution much smaller than ISU, and that's in Lincoln, Illinois, and it's closing. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so this is actually the second higher education institution to close in Lincoln in the past year. Lincoln College was in closing in May of 2022. That was a very abrupt closure of a 157-year-old institution, and it was a little bit bigger than the one that is going to close next year. And so I think its ripple effect economically was a little more felt. But Lincoln Christian University's departure is also kind of a hit to that community as well. So LCU has been in Lincoln for about 79 years. It was founded as a Bible Institute, and then it pivoted to offering broader programming, right, undergraduate, graduate degrees. And in 2022, they actually downsized their programming. They dropped it down to ministry-related degrees only, which I think was them trying to strike a balance between their original founding, but also the fact that they were facing really tough financial situations. They were a small private college, and as we know now, small private colleges have been facing enrollment challenges for a long time. And the Chronicle of Higher Education actually put together a data table of enrollment at some of these small colleges, and Lincoln Christian University in particular, their enrollment dropped 45% from 2010 to 2020. So their finances suffered as well. The academic downsizing was an attempt to address that, and to some extent it worked. But the president of LCU, Silas McCormick, said, unfortunately, all it did was put them in just enough of a financially healthy position that they could be acquired. And so what is going to happen now is they are going to turn over their ministry, their seminary programming, to a sort of sister organization in Missouri. They're going to get rid of their Lincoln, Illinois presence, so there will not be a campus there. And about 29 staff members, a few of them may be hired on for the Missouri school, but most of them plan to lose their jobs. So it was just kind of, the president describes it as a confluence of multiple factors, declining giving, declining enrollment. Being in a small rural area, too, is a challenge, as students may not see that as desirably as they once did.
Mm-hmm. Well, just about 1 minute remaining in our time together. I do want to mention this because it's just an interesting story. There was a fire at the Miller Park Zoo in Bloomington. Briefly, what happened there?
Yeah, so that fire was in a building that's about 110 years old, and it houses tigers, it housed a python, and that python enclosure actually had a faulty heating element, and so there was a small fire that really just created a lot of smoke in that building. And so initially, first responders were able to, you know, evacuate that. Zoo staff were able to evacuate all of the animals, but they found out that there was so much smoke in the building that the python, which had been the closest to the smoke, had actually inhaled too much of it. And so they had to make a decision when they were caring for the python to euthanize her. And the release that they sent out about it was so detailed, you could just tell that it was a very heartbreaking decision, but a very real consequence. Fortunately, it wasn't worse, but still just a very real loss for those zoo staff.
A big snake, too, more than 100 pounds, 20 feet long.
254 pounds.
So,
there was a video. There was like 9 people escorting her out. I mean, it's just very crazy.
Lindsay Jones is a reporter with WGLT in Bloomington Normal. Thanks for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you, Brian.
More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.